For our Peace Bucket, we're joined by Larry Whitner, who is a professor of history emeritus at SUNY Albany, among other things. And he recently had an op-ed or an article in Counterpunch, Conflict or Cooperation in U.S.-China Politics. Larry, what is going on with U.S. and China these days?
Well, it seems that these two mightiest military and economic powers are moving toward a Cold War or worse. There's heightened military confrontation between them, as well as economic competition. And of course, that's very dangerous in the contemporary world.
You know, reading your article, you point out that this conflict particularly worsened quite a bit under President Trump, particularly in his later years, and unfortunately seems to have continued under President Biden. But others I've talked to about the China-U.S. relationships also, you know, cite the pivot to Asia under Obama that also sort of increased tensions. You know, why? You know, obviously, United States is being challenged by China as sort of the, you know, dominant economic force on the planet. But, you know, why is there so much, you know, tension? Because as far as I can tell, China, you know, has never in recent years aggressively militarily, you know, threatened the United States or anything.
In certain ways, looking at it over the course of world history, major powers have always clashed. And the United States has been the hegemon on the world scene for decades now. Here comes China as a rising nation, moving from economic backwardness and military occupation by Japan to great power status, indeed the second most powerful nation in the world. So in certain ways, as long as nation states continue their competition on the world scene, rather than cooperate for the good of all, it shouldn't be surprising to us that a declining number one power like the United States would be a rival to the rising power of China. There are specific reasons for their conflict as well, of course. There's a conflict over the islands in the South China Sea. There's a conflict over Chinese claims to Taiwan. There's a conflict over the Chinese Belt and Road initiative that threatens to win friends for China and undermine U.S. and Western influence there. So there are specific conflicts, but there's also an underlying conflict that has always plagued great powers.
Now, one conflict that certainly in the last couple of years has received more attention and actually seems to divide the more progressive community in the United States is the issue of Hong Kong, which, you know, had been basically a colony for, I guess, 100 years or so of Britain, and then had sort of this independent status, but still part of China. But as China becomes more of a economic power, they sort of less need Hong Kong, and so they've been cramping down. You know, how should Hong Kong, you know, sort of play out? Because there's definitely local democracies issues, but there's also the control of the billionaires in Hong Kong itself. What's your sort of assessment of the Hong Kong, United States, China relationship?
Well, I think that the U.S. government wouldn't be as concerned about Hong Kong were there better relations with China. That is, democracy has never been on the top of the U.S. government's list when it comes to dealing with other countries. The U.S. government has been involved with all sorts of dictatorial regimes and has held its fire when dealing with them if they served U.S. government interests. In the case of Hong Kong, there's certainly a terrible crackdown on freedom of speech and democratic institutions, generally speaking, by the Chinese government. There are, of course, things that the U.S. government is responsible for in terms of limiting democracy at home. There's a great wave of voter suppression laws being put into place in the United States today, as well as long-term systemic racism. So both countries can justifiably point to terrible things being done by their world rivals. Nonetheless, there is a possibility for a cooperation between them if they would agree on the enforcement of the UN Declaration on Human Rights, which provides for humane policies toward all people and non-discrimination and people choosing their own governments and so on. So here too, if both countries are willing to play by the international rules, by the world rules, they could cooperate and do a lot better for themselves and the world.
So if, you know, Joe Biden picks up the phone and says, you know, Professor Whitner, what should my administration be doing at this moment to move in a more positive direction with China? What, you know, what would be besides, you know, joint respect for international human rights law? What are some of the other steps that the Biden administration could be taking?
Well, I think it could certainly suggest cooperative relationships on a variety of global problems. Certainly climate change would be ripe for a joint effort. The two nations are the world's largest emitters of greenhouse gases, and therefore no world climate agreement can stand or be effective without their working together and agreeing on what the targets are and what should be done, generally speaking. Furthermore, there's a worldwide disease pandemic going on, and both countries have tremendous ability to cope with it through their scientific and manufacturing and technological capabilities. So if they really cooperated and distributed vaccines around the world to all the world's peoples, as well as safeguarding their own people, they could do much to win friends around the world and win the plaudits of people around the world. And they don't need to build up their military forces or threaten war to establish a decent relationship. Furthermore, there's a nuclear arms race. The United States has thousands of nuclear weapons. China has hundreds of nuclear weapons. They're both building new and more dangerous kinds of nuclear weapons. They could agree on standards for freezing nuclear arsenals and even rolling them back. The United States and Russia could reduce their vast nuclear arsenals, which are most of the world's nuclear weapons. And China could, in turn, freeze its own nuclear arsenal. Both countries could stop building hypersonic nuclear missiles, for example, that are a threat to the world's survival and, of course, are tremendously costly. And if they stop building them, the world would greatly benefit, and they would greatly benefit by this wasteful use of people's resources.
We've been talking with Professor Larry Whitner, Professor of History Emeritus at SUNY Albany, about his recent article in Counterpunch, Conflict or Cooperation in U.S. China Politics. Real quickly, Larry, is there a place people want to follow your readings? How best they do that?
Oh, you can go to my website, which I believe is something like www.lawrenceswhitner.com, or you can take a look at my history of the world nuclear disarmament movement called Confronting the Bomb, to show how a people's movement did transform global confrontation into cooperation.
And we're out of time. Thank you very much, Larry. And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network.